Next one is eight.
Eight. Geez, I'm really fouling you up.
Okay, corrective action plan approvals. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. Why don't we first, let's skip over the Chevron Venico because we know we have a discussion on that for the moment and make sure that we can answer any questions on the other items in item number eight. That's the Raytheon site in Goleta, the Fransky residence in Watsonville, the former meth lab in San Mateo County, one of the few sites that we have in San Mateo County, a portion of our region, and the former All-American Cleaners property in Santa Maria. Are there any questions on any of those sites? By the way, Mr. Chair, I mentioned earlier that we had the Q&A document for the Fransky residence.
Yeah.
So we provided the answers for that.
I need a copy of that. There we go.
Got it there.
Mr. Jeffries shared his with me. Okay, any board questions then on Raytheon or any of the other sites? No. All right, I guess then we can proceed to Venico.
Okay, so for the Chevron Venico oil and gas facility in Carpinteria, this is an item that was before the board previously, and we actually, prior to launching into the item, had recommended that the board not take up the corrective action plan approval because we discussed Chevron Venico making some revisions. They've done that, and today we're here to present the corrective action plan. And where's Rich? Oh, here you are. So Rich Chandler of our staff will be making the presentation.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to do the slides for me? Good morning. I'm Rich Chandler. I'm in the site cleanup program, and today I'll be presenting a summary of a technical work plan that was submitted by Chevron for a cleanup at the Venico oil and gas facility in Carpinteria. Next. This map shows the regional setting of the site. As you can see, it's in Carpinteria between the 101 and the Pacific Ocean. It's about a 20-minute drive south of Santa Barbara. Next. And this is an aerial photograph of the site. The 101 is up here, Pacific Ocean, of course, down here. This is the main processing area of the site. There's a pier that services the offshore oil rigs. The main portion, the operating main processing facility, is separated from the western portion of the site by a road known as Dump Road. This open area up here is known as the former nursery area. Chevron at one time leased that property out for nursery operations. And just south of that is an area known as the marketing area. And then this vegetated area over here along the west side of the site is referred to as the buffer zone because it creates a buffer between the rest of the facility and the residential neighborhood to the west. Along the south side of the site, there's some railroad tracks. And there's a ditch that runs alongside those tracks. Any stormwater runoff that comes off of this western portion of the site discharges at the southwest corner into that railroad ditch. And from there, there's a trestle underneath those tracks, and that ditch discharges to the ocean down here somewhere. And then one more area to point out. Up on top of the bluff here, there's an area that's referred to as the former sandblast area. That's an area where metal parts were formerly cleaned. And at the base of that bluff, there's a seal rookery. Next. So the property was developed as an oil gas processing facility in the 50s. Before that, it was used for both agriculture and oil drilling. Chevron sold the facility to Tivinico in 1999. They performed a Phase 1 environmental site assessment at that time. And in reviewing that Phase 1 environmental site assessment, the Water Board identified 33 areas that they thought posed potential threat to water quality. Cleanup and abatement orders were issued in 2002 and 2004. And in response, Chevron performed site investigations beginning in 2003 and then most recently in 2007. Based on the results of those investigations, Water Board staff identified two areas that pose the greatest threat to water quality, and they include the nursery area, the buffer zone, and the railroad ditch, which are impacted by chlorinated pesticides, and then that former sandblast area where soil has been impacted by metals. Chevron presented a technical work plan in August of 2007 that presented a cleanup plan for the nursery area and the sandblast area. The Water Board staff found that plan to be inadequate, and Chevron withdrew the plan just prior to the board meeting in May of 2008. Water Board staff requested that they revise the plan to include, among other things, that the plan be a final remedial plan instead of an interim plan, and that it include cleanup levels for all chlorinated pesticides, not just DDT and its metabolites. That revised plan was submitted in August of 2008. It is now a final remedial plan. The proposed cleanup levels for DDT and its metabolites are now lower. They are 90 parts per million for DDT and DDE, and 30 parts per million for DDD. The proposed excavation areas in the nursery area and the buffer zone are shown in blue right here. The plan also calls for removing all detectable concentrations of other chlorinated pesticides, including dieldrin, chlordane, and lindane from the nursery area. And all chlorinated pesticides will be removed from drainage area 4, which is this lower area of the buffer zone, and from the railroad ditch. The plan also calls for engineering controls to prevent off-site stormwater runoff from entering the former nursery area. And these controls include site grading and installing curbs and gutters along Carpinteria Avenue to the north here and then along Dump Road here. A gate valve is going to be constructed at the southwest corner of the property where water discharges. Any stormwater that is generated at the site will be contained there and sampled prior to discharge. The former sandblast area will be excavated until metals concentrations are down to background concentrations. So in summary, Chevron's August 2007 work plan was reviewed by staff. It was distributed for public comment. Likewise, the August 2008 plan was also reviewed by staff and has been submitted for public comment. We received two letters that had technical comments and then four emails that were in support of those two letters, but did not contain technical comments. The letters and the emails and our response to all the technical comments are included in the staff report. Water Board staff believes that the August 2008 technical work plan is appropriate, but will require an addendum to include the following conditions. Those are that the additive toxicity of DDT and its metabolites must be addressed by using the additive toxicity equation as a field guide. The excavation in the buffer zone must be as close to mature trees as allowed by the City of Carpinteria's grading permit, and Chevron must comply with any revegetation conditions that are in that grading permit. The hay bales and silt fences that are currently at the site must remain until the engineering controls have been installed. The gate valve at the southwest corner of the facility must remain closed until sampling confirms there are no detectable chlorinated pesticides in the runoff. And work in the sandblast area will not occur during the months of December through May, because that is the seal berthing period. Water Board staff concludes that the technical work plan satisfies the requirements of our cleanup and abatement orders. Concentrations of chlorinated pesticides will be reduced so that the California Toxics Rule is not violated. Engineering controls will prevent off-site stormwater from entering the site, which will reduce erosion. And any runoff that does occur will be monitored prior to discharge. And so upon receiving the addendum with the previously discussed conditions, the executive officer will approve the technical work plan. Are there any questions?
Any board questions? Mr. Shallcross?
What's the time frame for getting the TWP back with the added?
For getting the work done?
For getting the plan done.
For getting the plan done?
I mean, is it?
Is
there any time gap?
No, as quickly as they can submit that addendum to us, which they've agreed to do, then
okay.
We can approve that right away.
Okay, great.
This one. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Briggs, we have two speaker cards.
Right.
This is Jerry Ross,
the responsible party.
And Kira Redmond. Does anyone else in the audience wish to address the board on this agenda item? Okay. Mr. Ross?
My name is Jerry Ross. I'm here representing Chevron today. I wanted to confirm, as Mr. Chandler had indicated, that we've been working with the staff. We've made the changes that they have requested, which were prompted by the concerns that had been raised by the different parties. We've looked at the various recommendations that Mr. Chandler has discussed with you, and those are not a problem. We've agreed to do an addendum work plan that will address those, and that should be a very simple addendum to do, given the concepts are simple and should not take much time. We're available to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, Kira Redmond.
Good morning, Chair Young, members of the board. I'm Kira Redmond, Executive Director of Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. As you know, Channel Keeper has been following the development of this cleanup plan very closely for quite some time. And we're definitely glad to see that many of our recommendations and the community's concerns have been taken into account in the revised cleanup plan that's before us today. And we do find that it's an improvement over the previous version. However, we continue to have concerns with the revised plan and sincerely hope that the board will correct these deficiencies today to ensure that this now final cleanup plan will be sufficiently protective of the environment and public health. For one, we continue to have major concerns with the proposed erosion and sediment control measures. The primary purpose of a sediment filter should be to control sediment, yet the responsible parties assert its function is simply a monitoring device. Simply put, erosion happens. To deny this fact is to deny that gravity exists. We fail to understand why the RPs continue to claim, and your staff seems to agree, that gravity doesn't exist. GeoMega's own modeling demonstrates that substantial soil erosion will occur from watersheds 1, 2, and 3 to watershed 4 on the order of several tons per year. This wouldn't be a problem if the remedial action were going to remove all contaminated sediments from the entire site, but this is not the case. Are they then suggesting that only the non-contaminated soil will erode, while contaminated soil will remain rooted in place forever? The facts are that some contaminated soil will still remain after remediation in watersheds 1 through 3, and that some volume of that contaminated soil will migrate towards the site's discharge point. Given these facts and the fact that the plan is now proposed to be a final rather than an interim remediation, Channel Keeper appeals to the board to require that a more sophisticated sediment filter capable of filtering out contaminated fine sediment be installed and that a better monitoring plan be required, and I'll comment on the monitoring plan in a moment. Your own staff previously found that a more effective sediment filter is a critical component in preventing migration of DDX-laden soil to off-site waters of the state, as articulated in numerous internal memos which we've attached to our comment letter. We note that the soil retention rate for the proposed sediment filter is only 90% under perfect conditions, indicating that at least 10% of potentially contaminated soil could pass through the filter. Your memos also note that the intended application of this type of filtration system is to serve as a partial control for temporary needs such as construction sites and as a mechanism to reduce clean sedimentation not to treat or remove toxic sediment, as is the case here. We're not proposing, as PADRE suggests in its response to our recommendation, that they install the equivalent of a wastewater treatment plant. That's ludicrous. However, what's proposed for sediment filtration is simply insufficient, and the RPs admit as much by noting that its purpose is not to filter sediment, but to serve as a monitoring device only. There are numerous other options that will do a better job of filtering the contaminated sediment that will migrate to the discharge point without requiring substantial additional investment, nor the equivalent of a wastewater treatment plant. And we strongly urge the board to require a better filtration solution. Channelkeeper also finds that the characterization of the sediment filter as a monitoring device only is ironic, given the gross inadequacy of the final proposed monitoring and maintenance of the filter. The filter has to be inspected more than just once a year and after significant, which is undefined, rain events as necessary. Inspections and necessary repairs should be conducted after storms of 0.25 inches and before all predicted rain events of that magnitude or greater. Furthermore, the plan proposes no routine chemical sampling of sediment retained by the filter. The monitoring plan implies that sediment samples will be collected and analyzed for only if DDT, DDE, or DDED is detected in the rare samples that will be collected of stormwater passing through the filter. All sediment retained by the filter must be sampled and analyzed regardless of discharge detections. If these constituents are detected in the sediment, that sediment must be excavated and disposed off-site. In addition, the proposed plan for stormwater monitoring is also inadequate. The overly restrictive conditions under which sampling can occur will result in an extremely low number of samples, if any. These criteria should be expanded to enable the collection of a greater number of samples to satisfactorily verify the effectiveness of the remediation.
Ms. Rudman, can you wrap it up, please?
Yeah, I'll do my best to go quickly. Also, the surface water samples collected for chemical analyses must be analyzed for all contaminants, not just DDX-related ones. And the sediment samples to be collected upstream should also be analyzed for these constituents. We also recommend that a sediment sample also be collected immediately downstream of the sediment filter and analyzed to assess the efficacy. Quickly, remedial action number 4, to remove from drainage area 4 only reasonably accessible pesticides that have a reasonable potential of being transported to waters of the state, is impermissibly vague, and we strongly urge that you delete or clearly narrowly define this. Moreover, the plan suggestion that if verification soil samples indicate detectable concentrations of constituents, then requirements for additional excavation will be discussed in the field. That's simply unacceptable. We have the same comment about what must occur after verification sampling in the sandblast area. The board must amend the plan to include an explicit requirement to remove soil contaminated beyond cleanup levels if they're found in verification samples. In sum, Channelkeeper strongly urges the board to condition their approval of the plan with requirements for the RPs to install and adequately maintain a more appropriate and substantial filtration system capable of preventing the off-site movement of contaminated sediment, conduct more frequent inspections of the filter and sampling of sediment retained by it, conduct more frequent stormwater sampling, analyze all surface water samples for all problematic constituents, and collect and analyze sediment samples upstream as well as downstream of the filter to assess its efficacy, and remove any additional contaminated soil if found through verification sampling. These conditions are particularly important in light of the fact that the proposed plan being considered is a final rather than an interim plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Does staff have any comments to what Channelkeeper has just stated?
Yes. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Sheila Soderberg. I'm
Is your mic on, Sheila?
Yeah.
It's just not close enough to you.
Okay. Thank you. I just didn't have it close enough. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Sheila Soderberg. I'm going to try to address each of Kira's questions as we go through some of this. I don't know if the board members have had a chance to look at the Q&A document that we distributed. I believe some of those answers to her concerns are addressed in that document.
And I wonder, Ms. Redman, have you had a chance?
Okay.
Chris, do you have a copy for her?
One issue that comes up that it has to do with actually the soil erosion. We are not defying gravity. We do believe that soil does erode and gravity does exist. The issue, however, is that will soil containing waste will reach the water body or reach, which is our primary concern, or will there be some sort of not only just the sediment transport reach the water body, but the dissolved phase or the sediment, or the suspended sediment reach the water body. There's a couple things to think about. There's the water quality issues, which we're trying to have the soil cleanup levels that were established are basically taking sort of like an apples and oranges comparison, but we're converting water quality numbers to soil numbers for cleanup standards. And in doing so, the responsible parties have established that the cleanup levels that exist for the DDT and the metabolites. Another issue to come into effect, so that addresses a water quality standard. In terms of a soil standard, in terms of effects on people, as well as critters, because then you're talking contact or absorption or eating, ingestion of the standard. Specifically, DDT is much higher, has a much higher effect on acute toxicity on mammals and avian species at in the ppm range. The most stringent standard that we could see, that I could find for an avian is 93 part per billion for DDT for an effect on an avian wildlife species. And my document is, for reference, is a US EPA April 2007 ecological soil creating levels for DDT and its metabolites. So one big issue is the erosion itself. Will the sediment itself cause a detriment to critters or water quality? We don't believe it would. Does that answer your question?
Is that a standard for an adult?
An adult bird? Avian species?
Yeah.
Actually.
And where I'm going with this is, what about eggs and larvae and juveniles? I mean, at what level?
And it varies because these toxicity reference values that they use, they look at a variety of different bird species. And the big thing with, it's not so much the dermal contact, it's if the bird actually ingests the DDT and then it gets absorbed into the body, into the fats of the bird. And that's the issue. What they have looked at is ring-tailed doves, Bengalese finches, raptor predator type species, let's see what other kind of critters. I'm not a biologist, but they've actually looked at fish, rainbow trout, northern pikes, but then in that sense they're ingesting DDT in dissolved in water. So I would say that it varies. But the toxicity reference values are based on different species through different studies. They look at the age of the bird. They look at the what kind of bird. Does that help?
Well, not really.
Okay.
What about the standard toxicity effluent testing that gets done where we look at daphnia and algae?
Can I ask her a question?
Sure.
Sheila, did you say that the cleanup level proposed is below those risk levels for?
Yes.
The cleanup level is to meet the water quality objective, which is significantly lower than the levels that are protective of the health risk of the critters, right? Is that what you?
It's said? Actually both. So the cleanup level is below the critter level, the critter impact level, and it's also below the water quality threshold level.
Right. So the cleanup level they're proposing is below the standard that
for
would be protective of
acute or chronic toxicity?
Right.
Correct.
That's what she's saying.
Okay. All right.
So one issue that we're worried about, of course, is the water quality. And so if if it does erode, the chance of it actually eroding all the way to the sediment filter, it will erode through time. But the fact is that the sediment that is there will not pose a water quality threat or a threat to the critters that may happen to walk through that area.
You mean the sediment
well.
That gets stuck in the filter?
Correct.
What about the comment of requiring testing of all of the sediment that gets trapped in the filter?
Actually, they've already sampled, so we know what is out there when they, you know, in terms of when they did their assessment. When they go out there and they do their excavation, they're going to be doing sampling. And so then there's those confirmation samples that will say what's in place, what remains, and what, you know, what the actual concentration is. Everything in terms of DDT metabolites, we're also concerned about the lindane, dialdrin, the other stuff as well. That when they do that sample analysis, that suite of analytes, they get all that information at one time for all the pesticides that are out there. And they also happen to be pretty much co-located. So it's not as if you find DDT here and then you find the lindane someplace else. So we will actually know what has been removed, and then we'll know what is remaining in place when they actually take their confirmation samples.
Well, where are the confirmation samples taken from?
From the bottoms of and the sidewalls of excavations.
Okay, but then the filter is further downstream or downflow, so to speak, correct?
Correct.
And we're not taking any samples of the sediment that gets trapped in the filters?
No. And predominantly because you're guessing that you're going to even back up when they do the excavation and they do the removal in the that watershed 3 area that's near the sediment filter, they're excavating everything to non-detect. And I think Rich wanted to say something.
I was going to say that those excavated areas are going to be backfilled with clean material, and a lot of that material is what's going to end up in the sediment filter. And I'd also like to add that the water, discharge water at the sediment filter will be sampled for detectable chlorinated pesticides. And that's our concern, is discharge of chlorinated pesticides to the waters of the state, not to sediment, but to the waters of the state. And so there will be no discharge of detectable chlorinated pesticides.
Could you state your name and who you're with?
I'm Rich Chandler. I'm with the site cleanup program.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Any other comments related to what channel keeper stated?
Ms. Redmond had, let's see, we talked about soil and erosion and sediment. In terms of the monitoring plan for the actual sediment filter itself, I believe Rich just answered that we will be monitoring the water, and that also the gate valve will remain closed, so they will be able to collect a sample before any water is discharged. So that is also preventative to make sure there's nothing going to be discharged that we don't, that nobody knows about, if you will.
Can you explain that one more time? I almost got it.
Okay. There's actually, at the southwest drainage channel, there's a sediment filter and there's a gate valve. And the Venico and Chevron have agreed that that gate valve will remain closed. So any rainfall that falls will then pond up. It will either infiltrate and then it'll pond up. And so then they will be able to collect the water sample at that location, verify there isn't anything in it, and then open the gate valve and let that water be discharged.
Can we put that photograph back up on the screen? Is it?
And I think Sheila, is that gate valve, is that below the filters or above the filters?
That's a good
question. And the sample monitoring for the water, is that going to be above and below the filter before the gate valve? Or just below the filter?
I'm not sure the configuration, but the sample will be taken from just before the gate valve, so it'll be the last possible discharge point at the site.
How big are these filters? Do we have an idea how big the filter?
I don't know. Do you want to address that?
The reason I'm asking is that, you know, the comment was made that they should be inspected. Because as long as the filters are in operating condition, everything should be fine.
Yeah, they'll be inspected prior to the beginning of the rainy season, and every time somebody goes out to take a sample, they'll be inspected again. Repairs will be made whenever it's necessary.
And what if it doesn't rain for 6 months? Will there be an inspection?
There's no need to inspect anything if there hasn't been any use of it.
Okay. So we don't have to worry about any rodents or anything?
No, not for this type of a culvert facility.
Okay.
Ms. Redmond just didn't see that last slide concluding, and I'll go to it here, because an issue came up with the gate valve remaining open or not, and so she was, oops, I'm sorry, I'm going backwards. Okay, right there. This was based on one of the board member questions and answers, that one of the requirements that we're asking Chevron and Menico to do is that the gate valve will remain closed until the runoff sample is confirmed. That is different. That was in the technical work plan previously. So I believe we've addressed one of her concerns.
Can you show us where that gate valve is on the aerial?
I can get this right. It's probably the best one.
The discharge point is right at the extreme southwest corner of the property.
And where does flow go? What is the direction of flow from that point?
Once she's looking to go back to the aerial.
Okay. There.
Okay, you see the railroad tracks here. There's a ditch that runs alongside those railroad tracks. So it discharges into that ditch. Flows along that ditch. There's a railroad trestle somewhere about right in here, and then that ditch flows under that railroad trestle and discharges out onto the beach in this area.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a comment that there was a question made about the work plan being a final work plan and that's somehow significant. But just so you know, that it is. Even if it's labeled a final work plan, ultimately the board has to determine that the cleanup is effective and protective. So if it turns out after doing all the cleanup and following the work plan that more work needs to be done, the board can require it. So this isn't, you know, there isn't a downside to the board approving it in that sense, because they can always require more if it becomes necessary.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Shawcross. And tell me again what happens to the sediment that's collected?
It's retained there.
Doesn't forever?
Well, until it possibly backs up the filter. You know what I mean?
And then one assumes it would be hauled away or?
Right. I would assume that the maintenance of the filters. My name is Chris Adair. I'm Water Board staff. I would assume that the maintenance of the filter will include cleaning it out. And disposal of the sediment, but it should be clean sediment because the fill is all clean fill from the excavation of the contaminants.
Okay, so none of the sediment is going out into the railroad ditch.
That's the plan.
But I thought that the filter was only 90% effective in trapping sediment. I mean, that's what Channel Keeper has stated. So is that true?
Well, again, I'd like to point out that the proposed cleanup levels are such that even if there were sediment that makes it through that filter, the concentrations are so low that there will be no detectable concentrations in the waters of the state. So that's not particularly relevant.
So it's basically what, in terms of it's what is passing and what is not, is basically if you think of you take a jar and you put a bunch of silt and sand in it and you shake it up and you have that suspended stuff that's in there, that's the stuff. If it was an extreme rainfall, it would flow out. The fact is that they're keeping everything closed until they can sample that suspended stuff. Theoretically, will have time to drop out or not be suspended anymore.
Is there any benefit to testing the water? I don't know. It seems to me like in some of the facilities we see, the water's tested as it comes out, as opposed to as it goes into the valve. I'm just wondering.
What we were trying to do was back it up so that it wouldn't discharge at all if it
happened
to have contaminants in it.
Okay.
That's actually a superior way to go, because if you test it after it's been discharged, you get the lab results
and then it's discharged
2 weeks later, and you find out what you discharged.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that for some of our duller people like myself.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And then I had another question. Excuse me. One more question on the sediment. Is this the sort of constituent that would build up in the sediment? I'm assuming there will be some of the constituent. I mean, once it's cleaned up, once the area is cleaned up to whatever level we're requiring, as the sediment erodes, it will contain some of the constituent, I'm assuming, at a level that we're all happy with. But will that, once it gets into the sediment pond, will that build up to, could it build up to a level that we're not happy with? Is that possible?
In the sense that DDT is one of its physical properties, it does want to, it's not, in fact, that's the thing that's kind of ironic, is that it is not dissolved easily. It's more immobile, and it will want to cling to the sediment itself just by default. By its physical nature of the property. The issue, though, too, you will have basically excavated everything that is of concern. So even though you may have molecules of DDT that's likely to be still in that sediment somewhere as it erodes down, it's not at a level that's going to affect human health, aquatic, or water quality.
Right, I understand that. I was just asking if it had the potential of concentrating, and increasing.
Well, there is no ongoing use of chlorinated pesticides on the property, so the concentrations will never get any higher than they are remediate it.
Okay, thanks.
Dr. Hunter?
So the soil sampling will occur at the excavated areas, and those excavated areas have been identified and determined, delineated by these preliminary evaluations. Is there any likelihood that there are irregular and shell deposits of these contaminants at places that are not going to be excavated that would then show up if we were monitoring sediment at some down point and in connection to a rain event? Because I understand you're saying that everything should be removed, but I find that to be a big assumption. Unless
well, we
you can
believe
really
that they've
say
done
there's no place where those soils are going to be popping up.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I do believe there's been a thorough assessment of the property. I think there's been over 110 locations just right within this one section of the property where soil samples have been collected. With any site, there's always a possibility that there may be some tiny area that you miss, but we believe that the assessment that's been done has adequately characterized this facility.
Where does the once that valve is opened and the 10% of the sediment that is going to get through the filter gets through the filter, does it end up in the railroad ditch?
Okay. Yes, it would end up in the railroad ditch, and then for it would have to, I guess back to that aerial, it'd have to travel down the, continue eroding down the railroad ditch to the culvert and then out the culvert. Sorry, to the ocean.
Okay. Do we, in our monitoring requirements, do we have any further monitoring of the railroad ditch at this point?
The railroad ditch is going to be, all the existing chlorinated pesticides that are in that ditch are going to be removed at this time, and then subsequent to that, they'll be monitoring the discharge at the gate valve, so in theory, there would be no further need to sample the railroad ditch.
All right. How does staff feel about requiring some confirmation sampling of the railroad ditch after this cleanup has been effective, just to confirm that nothing's
Well, they will do confirmation sampling in the railroad ditch after it's been cleaned out.
That's part of the plan. After the filter has done its job and all the excavation has been completed up in the...
We could make that a condition, but in my opinion, it's not necessary.
Okay.
The other issue to take into account is that basically over here there's an agricultural area. And so right now, the stormwater runoff is going to be bifurcated, if you will, because of this cleanup. So you will have a second conveyance system that will take water from this to this discharge location. The other facility also discharges to the same location, but that will be separated. But what's ironic is you have this agricultural area because of the historical use of pesticides throughout California and the United States. It's likely because this is the area of discharge or water flow down that ditch that you could actually get DDT from elsewhere, not obviously at the concentrations you would ever have in a nursery because that was a concentrated use of the pesticide. But there would still be some, I don't want to call it ubiquitous either, but there would potentially be something from another property that's...
is contributing to it.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'd like to add to that, this residential area was also agricultural prior to the late 1950s, and it's reasonable to assume that DDT was used on that area also. In fact, all of Carpinteria, it was heavily agricultural, and so any DDT that shows up later in this railroad ditch could be from almost any source within Carpinteria.
But these other locations are not going to be doing any excavation.
That's true.
Correct. Only the Chevron property. Mm-hmm. So I would suspect that if there's any increase in concentration in the railroad ditch after all this work is done, it's a reasonable conclusion to make that it could have come from the excavation.
I think it would be more reasonable to conclude that it came from somewhere else rather than an area that's been excavated and cleaned up.
Chairman Young.
Yes.
Perhaps we could compromise and ask the RP to sample the sediments in the filter when it's maintained the first or second time to confirm that there's nothing going into the ditch.
That would be a step in the right direction. But also, I think with that, maybe some confirmation sampling after all the work has been completed in the ditch. It's not going to cost that much.
Are you saying directly after everything's done or a year down the road? Because that's what they're going to do.
There will be confirmation sampling.
There will be confirmation sampling.
After the work is done. In the railroad ditch.
In the railroad ditch, yeah. They're doing that. They're cleaning that out to non-detect.
Right.
And they'll do confirmation sampling until it's non-detect.
Okay, and I mean after the filter has done its job, after the excavation is completed, not in the ditch, but in the upper part of the property.
That's empty too. They will also take confirmation samples in that area 4.
Okay.
Because that's all going to be ND as well.
Right, but those confirmation samples are going to be up in the excavation area.
Well, there's actually, maybe that's part of the confusion, is that there are actually... Let me see if I've got to find that map.
Going the wrong way.
I know. I keep doing that. I'm sorry. Here we go. That shaded area there, area number 4 is what we've been calling it, that will be to non-detectable concentrations. So they'll go out there, they'll excavate what, because there are small spots there. They're not as high as those areas in the blue. They're not above the 30 and the 90. They're below that, but they're going to take out everything that to non-detectable concentrations in that area. Then they're actually also going to do the same thing along that railroad ditch to non-detectable concentrations. So after they do all that excavation, then they'll go out there and they'll take the soil samples, of which Rich will be present out there, and that was in our Q&A document, that Water Board staff will be present on site for the confirmation sampling. And so then if they do contain detectable concentrations of pesticides, then obviously they haven't completed the excavation, they haven't completed the removal, they'll have to do additional excavation until those samples show that you have non-detectable concentrations.
When they do the confirmation sampling in the excavation area.
Okay, that's at the nursery area.
Right,
okay.
To get down to non-detect.
what's considered to be a confirmation sample? Do they do two in a row? Or once they hit non-detect, is that the end of the line?
Well, think of...
I ask that because with some of the previous sampling, apparently there's been some higher levels deeper down, and that's just because of some randomness, I guess, with the contaminant. But perhaps you could hit non-detect, and then if you took another sample 6 inches below that, you might find some more contaminant. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, I think your level of accuracy is you're thinking about a backhoe bucket when you're out there and you're actually making these, you're basically taking a big scoop, 3 cubic yards usually of soil, where you take a big chunk out, you put that aside, it may go on plastic or visqueen. Then somebody actually goes in there and they collect a sample from the bottom of the backhoe bucket. But it may vary, too, in terms of, you know, if you have just one little backhoe bucket, you may only need the one sample on the bottom and maybe one or two on the sides. Compared to a much larger area, you're going to have a lot more samples. So there is some variation, and, you know, it may vary based on the soil type, where because this stuff does want to absorb to soil, it's going to absorb more to a clay versus to a sand. So you may have some variation. They'll use their professional judgment, and, of course, with our regulatory oversight as well, we'll be out there to see, yes, that is reasonable or that is not reasonable.
Okay. All right. And Mr. Jeffries.
How far does that ditch run? Does it go to the agriculture? Is it property? Does it go further south, north?
That's the Amtrak railroad train that runs the entire length of California.
Okay. How far does that ditch go?
The ditch goes from this corner. Well, the water discharges into the ditch. The ditch runs all the way along the railroad track. Right about here, I believe, there's a railroad trestle, and the ditch turns at that point, goes underneath the railroad tracks, and then discharges onto the beach right here. So that's about, I'm guessing, maybe 300 yards or so.
Are you asking how far to the
east? To the south, because if they're going to clean up that ditch and there's other areas that are draining into that, then there could be the DDT come from those other areas as well.
Right.
And that's...
Yes.
The ag land is to the right of this particular project site?
Yeah, there's agricultural properties here, and this is former agricultural property here. In fact, all of this was actually former agricultural property.
Well,
everything you see in the picture there basically was formerly agriculture. But
most of that is residential and streets and so forth, so a lot of that's capped.
Correct.
But to the right of that project area, didn't somebody tell us that it was active agriculture land now?
Yes.
Okay.
Right there.
Does that ditch run to that, along that agriculture land as well?
Yeah, it runs the entire length of the track within this photo.
All right, that's what I'm trying to find. And then where are we going to make sure that Chevron cleans the ditch? Now, what ditch are we talking about?
We're talking about the length of ditch that extends from their corner of the property here down to that railroad trestle.
Okay. But doesn't that agriculture land also flow into that same ditch?
It does.
Okay. So what are we going to do to test that to see if there is, during any runoff, that we have any constituents coming from someplace else?
We have no plan to do that.
So we're cleaning up the ditch, but we have no guarantee the ditch will stay clean because we could have flows from other areas. Is that what you're telling me?
Correct.
But those would not be Chevron's responsibility.
Well, I understand that. Right. I understand that. But some of the questions then of monitoring that ditch after the cleanup's been done, and then if we have some type of event that there's flows in there, and then we have more constituents back in there because DDT binds the sand or dirt and flows back in there, then we've got the same problem we've got right now. Maybe at a lower level, I don't know. But my problem. My thought is, how are we going to monitor to know if you find additional constituents after some major event, where is it coming from? It may not be coming from the project site. It may be coming from someplace else.
Yeah, that was my point. That was why I was saying I didn't think it was appropriate to keep sampling the ditch after the cleanup has been done.
Okay. But Chris had, a reasonable suggestion to require some sampling of the sediment in the filter.
Well,
then we would know whether that is actually contributing.
That was one of my questions I had earlier. Is the sampling going to be done above the filter,
right,
and also below the filter? Because then we can see how active the filter is actually. Is it doing its job? And I know Chris said assuming, and I don't like to assume because I like to have the facts that we can base that cleanup on, that there's some factual.
Would you like to see some sampling after the filter?
I would like to see in that settlement pond of the filter is going to create sampling is in that as well as what's coming out of the filter. Then we know what that 10% you were talking about.
Right. Chris, is there, or Rich, is there a location that can be sampled that Mr. Jeffries is referring to?
Yeah, we can. Jerry, you can sample the sediment, correct?
The current plan.
Why don't you come up to the microphone?
Jerry Ross for Chevron. The current plan is the sediment filter will be located before the gate valve.
Right.
I understand.
And the filter is really intended to try to trap some of the sediment. And the reason we want to trap the sediment is to do exactly what has been suggested, be able to test the sediment and see if it's contaminated. And then if that sediment that's trapped in the filter is contaminated, then it tells us we may have a potential issue in the area that's been excavated, and we need to go back and look in that area. So it was sort of a sequential program to try to make sure we understood what the sediments looked like that were getting discharged into the creek. Once we sampled those, if there was an issue, then to go back and try to get a better understanding as to where they're coming from and to take appropriate responsive action.
How do you feel about some additional confirmation sampling after the valve?
The only thing that to collect the sample after the valve, you're now in the railroad.
Right.
Ditch. And Mr. Jeffries' analysis of the dynamics of the drainage area and the watershed is exactly right. The railroad ditch will become recontaminated after we're done with our excavation. Along the agricultural area where the railroad ditch flows towards our property, we've seen DDT levels that are higher than what's going to be excavated. So we do know from off-site sources completely unrelated to anything that Chevron or Vinico has done that there will be sediments that will be transported to the railroad ditch. It will become recontaminated. And sampling the railroad ditch really provides no meaningful data points on the effectiveness of Chevron's remedial program.
How about sampling the sediment that's in the filter?
Yes.
That would be?
We will agree to that.
You would be willing to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd still like to see some kind of monitoring
after the
gate valve.
At the valve itself.
Right. That'd be after the filter.
Right.
So that tells us how good the filter is actually working.
Right.
And to be all fair, I wouldn't expect Chevron to be responsible for other constituents that are coming from off-site. Not his responsibility. And that was the reason for my questioning, is that this could go on and on and on if it's not your responsibility. The other question, and you brought it up, is that how are you going to know at what period of time, unless you've had some major event, that as you're doing your removal, that there isn't any more constituents coming from that particular area?
Which area, sir?
Well, the area that you're removing the constituents.
What we have is basically a two-prong excavation plan. And it's really driven off of a Department of Agriculture model that's been well-used and well-tested that shows that the area where there will be some residual level, albeit as has been explained, very low, that the potential for the migration of soils is extremely remote. The DDT and its metabolites do degrade with time. The half-life is roughly 17 years. And for the time period that we're talking about in which any erosion would occur, we're going to see these materials disappear. So in the area where there's the potential for sediments within our lifetimes being discharged into the creek, that's where we were going to go to non-detect for all of the areas where there was a potential for the sediments being washed out. And then if we found a problem with the sediments that we were sampling in the filter, that's when we would step back and try to get a better handle on why.
I have one more question for you, sir. During your removal, what protection are you doing for airborne material? Not so much for the DDT, but more of the site that was for the sandblasting where the metals are in the dirt?
That's a very good question. One of the things that we will have to do after the regional board is signed off on our plan is we have to go to the city of Carpinteria and get a permit from the city to do this work. And that permit is going to trigger a CEQA process. And what the city will end up doing is they're going to look at all of the issues while the regional board's concern is focused on water quality and protecting waters of the state. Under CEQA and from the city's perspective, they view their environmental mandate to address all potential issues associated with this remedial action, which will include emissions, dust, things that could get airborne as a result of this. So that will be addressed as part of the city's permitting process.
The reason I bring that up is most time you see constructions that they're watering the dirt down or the sand, whatever it happens to be, and as they're removing. That stops some of the airborne, but it also causes some runoff. So I have concerns on both sides.
We understand. We're very sensitive to that.
What's the distance between the filter and then the gate valve in feet?
Well, the filter is intended to be right in front of the gate valve.
Okay.
You know, the idea is to catch all of the water just before it flows out to be able to catch enough sediment to be able to analyze and determine whether, in fact, our system is working as we anticipate.
Yeah. So it's no different than if they're on the other side of the valve.
Well, my point is on sampling on both sides of the filter.
Yeah.
Or even at the...
Well, they are sampling on the other side of the filter up in the excavation area,
right,
getting a confirmation that there's no detect. So that it just way up to the filter is like the last stop before the gate valve.
Well, I'm sure that the staff understands the concerns of the board, and I anticipate that they will take all precautions to resolve that.
Well, I'm very much in favor of sampling the sediment in the filter.
And I'm in favor of taking grab samples
of the
on the downside
okay.
of the filter. I want to see it on both sides. That's
okay.
what I'd like to see.
Okay.
Then that would give me assurance okay. that the job is being done correctly.
Is that something that Chevron would be agreeable to
yes.
add into the good?
A question on that: If the filter is adjacent to the gate valve, how are you going to sample on the downside of the filter without discharging?
We are simply going to have to move the filter back enough distance to be able to grab a grab sample.
Right, but you want the sample coming out of the valve, the
downside
of the valve.
I want it just before the valve because you're not going to have the valve open during all this testing.
And you want effluent sampled as opposed to sediment.
The problem with sediment is the DDT binds to the sediment.
And that's what
I have the concern
about. Okay, and that'll tell us something if there's
right.
DDT in the sediment in the filter, and if they take a effluent sample,
before it hits the valve, then we're going to know if there's anything that's gotten into the effluent.
Do we have a comment on that from Sheila?
Can I just point out something, too, that right now, with the hot spots in place, you know, nothing has been done at this point. The hot spots are still there. When they do go, whether it's Channel Keeper or Chevron or Venico have collected a water sample right in that same location, there have not been detectable concentrations of DDX in the water itself. Okay. So, I mean, right now you're talking about collecting a water sample and a sediment sample after the excavation. If you're not finding it with the waste in place, you won't find it when the waste has been removed.
Well, sure. Mr. Chairman, just to follow that up.
Yeah.
My thoughts are, I'm sure that Chevron is probably going to have a portable lab there. And to assure that we have proper cleanup at the levels that are required by the state of California, I would like to see those samples taken for assurance to me that we are cleaning the waters up for the people of California.
Okay. We already have that in the plan to collect water effluent samples. That's already there. Okay. So I think we're just talking about adding some sediment sampling to the plan.
Okay. That would be great.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mr. Schell?
I had one question for Mr. Ross. I'm sorry. I know I asked this before. When you sample the sediment that's collected, and if it comes back clean, then what happens to that sediment? I mean, are we talking about a lot of sediment, tons and tons? Are we talking about?
Remember, all we're trying to do is to have enough of a filter to catch sediment so we can sample it before it goes out.
So
if it's clean, my expectation is it'll just be thrown off to the side.
So the sediment filter is basically just a monitoring device.
It's a monitoring device. Okay. It's really intended to give us an opportunity to catch the sediments that would be going into the creek to see what, whether our system's effective.
So will at any time sediment beyond the 10% that would get through the filter be going into the going out to the railroad ditch?
There will be some sediment because the filter is not designed.
I understand that. But so in other words, no water will be going out to the ditch that doesn't go through the filter.
Correct.
And that sediment will not be allowed to go out to the ditch, regardless of it, whether it's clean or not.
Only the sediment that gets through the filter.
Exactly. No, I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the sediment that's caught in the filter.
Oh, no, that will not go into the ditch.
Ever.
Yeah. Ever.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, my last comment.
Okay.
Mr. Ross, you made a statement that, and I'm not a scientist, but you made a statement that the life of DDT is about 17 years.
That's from EPA's webpage.
Well, I'll disagree with them because I chair a harbor district in Salinas Valley, and they stopped using DDT over 20 years ago, and we're still getting sediment into the harbor that we dredge out still has DDT.
I said the half-life. The problem that you run into with DDT is it's so resistant to biodegradation that it lasts a long time.
It lasts a long time.
And my only point that I made is it does biodegrade slowly. The half-life, according to EPA's webpage, is about 17 years. And when you're doing a cleanup to what's already below the water quality objectives for the state, with the passage of time, it will only get better.
That's why I'm so adamant about looking at the discharge of below the filter.
We understand.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and then I've got a couple of questions, though. If there is sediment that's contaminated in the filter, then what happens?
If we find contaminated sediment in the filters, we're going to call Mr. Chandler up. And we're going to sit down with him and talk about what to do in terms of to assessing the effectiveness of our system.
And then the soil that you are excavating?
Yes.
That you know has some levels of contaminant in it. Where's that soil going?
It'll go to a disposal facility. Do we know which one?
Okay.
It obviously has to go
okay.
be lawfully
be
disposed
off-site.
Of, yes.
All right.
Then my last question, this is for Rich. The background levels of heavy metals at the sandblasting site, I see here for zinc, 20,000 parts per million. Is that correct? It just seemed like a very high number compared to the other numbers.
Zinc typically does have a fairly high number, and it also has fairly high regulatory levels, and I don't believe that violates any regulatory guidelines.
Is that the 20? Is that an accurate figure for what's there? Is that the background levels at the sandblasting site? That's what the question was.
Question,
Q&A document.
The samples were taken from outside, just outside the area where the sandblasting was known to occur, so the concentrations of metals that were there are just what's found in that area naturally in the rock.
Doesn't that seem high, Roger? It seems like, isn't that 20 grams?
I don't really have a reference point one way or the other.
I mean, even comparison to these other metals like copper, copper and zinc are not, should be on the same order of magnitude, I would think, or even lead.
I can try to put that in perspective.
Okay.
There's a San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board developed an environmental screening levels, which we use to evaluate whether there's a risk to groundwater. And one of the numbers for residential land use is 2,500 milligram per kilogram. Commercial land use is 5,000 milligram per kilogram.
And this is zinc you're referring to?
Pardon?
Zinc?
Zinc.
Okay.
There's actually an eco-risk number for plants is 190 milligram per kilogram, and soil invertebrates is 120 milligram per kilogram.
Okay.
Anything else?
Any other board questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a comment and a question.
Go ahead, Mr. Shaw.
I think a lot of my questions, now that I look at it, maybe some of the other board members, could have been clarified if we'd had a schematic of the device. You know, do we?
We do have one.
Okay, because I'm trying to picture, you know, where's the filter compared to the gate? Is it at one end of the pond and the water pond's over here and the sediment's over here? It sounds to me like it's – my question is, while you're doing that, my question is, does all the water that goes out through the gate into the ditch go through the filter?
Yes.
Okay.
In theory.
Well, this is all theory right now.
Well, there's a culvert there now, and that's where all the water that runs off the site goes through that culvert.
And you have any idea about how much sediment we're talking about? Is it tons or is it a bucketful?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. There was an estimate in the model, but of course that's before these engineering controls have been installed. We're going to prevent. Right, as it is right now, there's off-site water that comes down Carpentry Avenue and down Dump Road that comes onto this property. All that water is going to be diverted from entering this property. So the modeling numbers that were done for erosion, you know, are no longer applicable. So I can't give you a number on.
But can you give me an idea between a bucket and tons? I mean, is it somewhere in between?
Well, it's a heavily vegetated site, so okay. I don't imagine. It'll be closer to bucketfuls than it will be to tons.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Okay.
I was picturing tons of the stuff that had to be
It's a relatively flat site. It's going to be regraded to be even flatter, and it's covered with vegetation.
Great.
So it's going to be a fairly low number.
That's really helpful. Thanks.
That's a schematic.
Well, can you do a little more?
Matt? Like, tell me what's what here. Where's the sock? Where's the sock that filters?
Maybe it'd be better if we get an engineer up to talk about it. Jerome, can you?